Ole, 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 ole. Oh my goodness. I tell you, I was very excited to see how the U.S. played yesterday. And we'll get to the red card situation in a second. But they win. They beat Bosnia and Herzegovina 2-0. And they did it with a player down for more than 36 minutes of that game. And if you're a fly-by-night soccer fan, which, no big deal. But the problem is when you get a red card, you get ejected. You're out of the game. And so now all of a sudden you're playing with 10 players instead of 11 on the pitch. And that is problematic, when especially when you are playing against one of the best teams in the world. I mean, just from a scale perspective, Bosnia-Herzegovina is in the round of 32. Not a favorite, but a gritty team, plays good defense. They'll make you pay if you make mistakes. And the U.S. did make a mistake. And at the time, they were only up 1-0. Which, by the way, Flo Balogun put him up 1-0, and it was unbelievable, the sights and sounds of that stadium.
Fossil would go long. Team Ream, only man there, able to steer it to Adams, flicks it along Tillman. He's got Balogun making a run off him. Can he get around to that ball? To the deflection, Balogun scores! Flo Balogun, first to react to the deflection.
He hit the LeBron James silencer celebration after that goal, which I don't know why, but it was way better than when LeBron does it. It was just very, very cool. So Balogun puts him up 1-0. But then later on, Balogun gets called for a red card. Stepped on one of the Bosnian players' ankles, missed the ball. And after the VAR system kicked into place, VAR, which stands for Video Assistant Referee, they came back and said, yep, red card, Balogun's out of the game. Well, Balogun's one of their best players. He stretches the field for him. He makes, as his job as a striker, stretches the field, gives other guys more room on the field, and that creates a bunch of opportunities. Well, now he's out of the game. And you're looking at a 1-0 lead, very narrow lead against a good team who was kind of surging at that point. And what does the United States do? Malik Tillman puts it in the net.
9 minutes plus stoppage time to go.
But this run-up is telling me more power.
Look at how Vassal's giving up the entire right side of his goal. Tillman!
And by the way, just absolute class by Malik Tillman. That was a free kick, curled it in over the wall that was set up by Bosnia and Herzegovina and put it in the corner of the net. Absolute world-class striking there. And that put the United States up for good, 2-0. They go on to win that game. They go on to the round of 62. Belgium on the other side next week. And did any of you guys catch it? Brian, you probably were asleep. Jason, you may have been asleep as well. Did you catch any of that game?
No, I was asleep.
Oh, my goodness gracious. It was the just the vibe. You know how, like, in a World Series game, you can feel the electricity coming off of the TV? That's what it was like last night. You could feel the crowd at home. It was absolutely spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. Meanwhile, I don't know. It's very odd to me, the way people are covering these two climbers that got to the top of the Empire State Building. Like, first it's, oh, well, they have this pro-peace flag. Okay, well, they hang the flag up on the top of the Empire State Building. And then, and by the way, the flag says, when the power of love beats the love of power, the world knows peace. Okay, tremendous. But then these two people, they get engaged at the top of the Empire State Building. Angela Nicolou and Ivan Birkis, by the way, they were the focus of Netflix's documentary in 2024, Skywalkers, A Love Story.
That's a good documentary.
I have not seen it yet. Well, I'm going to see it. I'm going to watch it now.
If you are, and I'm afraid of heights.
Same.
So watching this documentary.
Did it make your palm sweat?
And my feet.
Oh, God.
But it was
that,
so,
you might need to get that checked out.
But it was such a good documentary. I've watched it twice. Definitely check it out. So that was going to be my question. I haven't dove into the story. I'm like, well, did they
Well, then they climbed
down. Harnesses.
No, I mean, I don't know. It looked like they didn't.
See, there's a part in the documentary where they are climbing the tallest building in the world, which was in Taiwan, I believe.
Okay.
And they have to get past the construction workers and security because they don't want people doing that.
Yeah.
So my first thought is, well, how did these people get past security, or, you know, how did they get to the top of this thing?
Well, apparently they got through a hatch on the 102nd floor of the Empire State Building. But okay, so the thing turns from, what are these people doing on top of the Empire State Building flying a flag? What are these people doing? Oh, they're getting engaged. Oh, well, that's. And I'm like, hello, two people just got to the top of the Empire State Building. So, that feels like a security breach to me.
So if you look out the window behind you, Chris, and you see the cranes.
Yeah.
There are parts in these documentaries where they climb to the very top of these cranes. No harnesses, no nothing.
That's nuts. And that's absolutely crazy.
So now this makes sense because now I know it's those two. It's like, geez.
And then, by the way, I got AccuWeather out here going, oh, well, it was 10 degrees cooler up at the top of the Empire State Building.
There's
when they
your
were
motivation.
Up there. It was 82 degrees when it was 93 down on street level in New York City yesterday. They were just trying to beat the heat. And then the wind gusts were only 14 miles an hour. How are we framing this story as anything other than this is a severe security threat?
Now, I love this documentary, but when they get to the top of this building in Taiwan, they do the dirty dancing thing, whatever you call that, where he lifts her up and literally.
Oh, having the time of my life?
The space on top of this building, because they climbed to the top of the building. Then they got to climb the needle.
Well, that's where they got to. They went all the way to the needle.
And so you literally have like 5x5 squared. You know, they put a plank there and they did
the dancing.
My God.
No, I saw this yesterday too. It's like, and Bev was, well, they got engaged up there. It's like, well, that's lovely. You were engaged? Like, yes, for about 3 minutes. And then my fiance got blown off the top of the Empire State Building.
Right. She took one wrong step.
Yeah. Like, no, thank you.
I don't know. It was, obviously, unbelievable feat. Crazy.
Yes.
But it's odd the way that.
Wrestling and alligators are an unbelievable feat, too.
Well,
I'm not doing that
engaged.
Either.
And then obviously somebody had their social media because they were posting pictures of social media while they were being arrested. So very odd story.
Very weird.
Meanwhile, Michigan lawmakers blew past their self-imposed July 1st deadline to finalize a new state budget. This is it. Again, I appreciated. The notions that we got yesterday that, oh, yeah, we're working hard. We're going to get this thing done. We think we're going to get it done. Well, it's Thursday. Tomorrow's the 3rd. People are off because of the holiday. And you're knocking down the door next week, potentially, getting something done. So we still have no state budget. Obviously, disagreements between the Republicans and Democrats in Lansing. And they have said that they have some sort of framework in place, but they don't have a deal yet put into place. Meanwhile, the Tigers continue their winning ways. They beat the Yankees in 11 yesterday, 6-2.
That's called a winning streak.
Here's AJ Hinch.
Our guys were in the fight from the beginning of the game. Both teams were. And when we got the lead, it felt nice. You know, we missed an opportunity in the sixth to kind of stretch the lead a little bit, which would have made it more comfortable for us, especially as they, put together a rally in the ninth. But huge 10th inning, gutsy inning by Cater. And then some really, really good at-bats, starting with the 0-2 to walk with Lee, all the way through to Z-Max play that created a little bit of chaos. So fun flight ahead, after a really, really good series.
McGonigal goes yard. Dylan Dingler with a couple of hits as well. Colt Keith gets on the board. Zach McKinstry as well. That's three, Jason. That's three. Keep it going.
That's called a winning streak.
And the Yankees have lost 7 in a row. Isn't that a shame?
Yeah.
Absolute shame. Congressman Tim Walberg on the other side. It's JR Morning. Well, lawmakers in Washington, at least in the House, left a little early to get their July 4th recess kickstarted. But it all kind of unraveled when there were efforts to put the Save America Act in on the floor, and things fell apart. It was that. They were trying to put together the defense spending bill as well. But again, things just weren't working the way that Republicans would have liked, at least from the president's perspective. Let's talk about it. Congressman Tim Walberg, who should be on vacation, but still getting up early with me this morning. It's good to talk with you, Congressman.
It's good to be with you. I'm still here in D.C. I held a hearing in my Education Workforce Committee yesterday, and we're still trying to get the things done that the people want to do. And the SAVE Act is something that the Democrats have held up now for literally months. The people want it. 88% of the people out there, polls say they want to make sure our elections are secured and that only citizens vote in our federal elections. And that's the way it ought to be. We passed the SAVE Act three times in the House already. This last effort, I think, was misguided. Knowing that the Senate isn't there yet, we should have passed the National Defense Authorization Act by itself and got that done. But sometimes less than cool heads prevail, and there are individuals that like the whole clickbait opportunity, and we have to deal with them. They represent districts who have elected them, and this is how the process works, sometimes messy. But this is a fabulous period of time that we're really living in right now can't forget the U.S. Soccer team continuing on. That's a great thing. And then we have the National American State Fair going on. I had a chance to go over and see the Michigan booth there yesterday, a fabulous booth showing what has taken place and will take place in Michigan. And so there are a lot of good things happening, but Congress continues to labor on. And on Saturday, we celebrate the one-year anniversary of passing the One Big Beautiful Bill, the Tax Cuts for Families Act, and a lot of good things have happened because of that.
Well, I want to go back to the Save America Act, because it seems like is leadership communicating with those on the other side, meaning in the Senate, because it doesn't seem like Republicans are on the same page in both chambers.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And the Senate has, I think, archaic, outdated rules that they're suffering under, and we're encouraging them to do some changing there that I think needs to be done.
Do you mean the filibuster?
The filibuster, yeah. The filibuster, 60-vote cloture requirement that they have. That really is a relatively new rule. That filibuster has not been part of the Senate for its entire history. It's been added later on, and the way it's done now is ridiculous, that one person can throw down a certificate requiring a 60-vote vote to take place to bring a legislation even up for consideration. It's not a vote to pass it or defeat it. So, I mean, this is stopping what's going on. We don't have a filibuster in the House. We debate. We vote on things. And as seen even this past week, it doesn't always go the way the majority wants it to go. But we're able to keep moving. This is not the case in the Senate. So I'm hoping that cooler heads prevail. If we can't get all of the SAVE Act, which would include early and late voting, mail-in voting, and all of the rest, at least the requirement for a picture ID and an indication, a clear assertion that you are an American citizen to vote. If we could do that, we could take care of most of the concerns that citizens have relative to the security of elections. So we've done that in the House. We've done it the fullest way. If the Senate can't do it, then send us something that at least goes that direction.
Congressman, we just have a minute left here. Is there a concern as we get closer to November? You know, obviously the way that people saw the returns that they did as a result of the Working Family Tax Cuts Bill was a plus. People got more money back in their returns, more monies in their pockets. But with everything going on with the price of gas and Iran and some of the other issues, is there a concern, at least from your perspective, that the midterms might not go the way that you want?
Oh, there's always a concern. Yeah, you know, people make that decision. And yet I think as the election grows closer and we are able to get the information out and remind people that they saw the largest tax returns in history come in their lives. And the majority went to people making less than $100,000. 70% of the filers making less than $100,000 had the largest returns percentage that they've ever seen. We saw farmers get major benefits that helped them in the agricultural industry move forward. So much happened in one big, beautiful bill that as we have a chance to talk about it, I know the president will get on target more on that issue, showing what's what's taking place and the need to continue on. 1 year, and so not even all of the parts of the One Big Beautiful Bill have actually taken effect yet. They will take effect by Saturday. And I think that's good for students, education institutions, for parents, with the child tax credit being expanded. No tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security for the majority of Social Security recipients. All of that is good stuff, and we can't forget that. And I think the campaigns will help people acknowledge it and remember that's what took place under Republican administration and Republican majorities in the House and Senate.
I know you're a fisherman, but this soccer run is pretty good, isn't it? It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's everything about it's pretty cool.
I know.
Well, and, it's highlighting America.
It's exactly right. And people are coming from all over the world going, wow, this place is pretty good. Place is pretty good. Congressman Tim Walberg, thank you for your time as always. Happy 4th to you, and we'll talk soon.
You as well.
Take a break. More coming up on the other side. A new book on the Founding Fathers. It's next. So one of our friends who we talk to often on economic issues, also a history buff. And he's got a new book out. It's called Books and the Founding Fathers and Their Influence on America Today. And our friend is Dr. Tim Nash, the Senior Vice President Emeritus, Director of the Northwood University Center for the Advancement of Freedom, Free Enterprise, and Entrepreneurship. Doc, good morning. It's good to have you back.
Great to be with you, Chris.
First of all, a man of many talents, obviously. But how... What prompted you to go down this road and write this book?
Well, I'll tell you, it was really an idea that my good friend and prominent U.S. historian, George H. Nash, no relation to me, but George is one of America's top historians. He holds a PhD from Harvard. He's a scholar on a number of different parts of the U.S. economy from a historical perspective. And so I read a piece George wrote years ago called Books and the Founding Fathers. And I approached him late last year and I said, George, what if we take some of the work you've done on the Founding Fathers and what influenced them and then bridge that subject, the history of the United States, what made us great, what got us started, with the fact that in 200 years, now 250, we've become the greatest economy in the world. What's the link between the Founding Fathers and great entrepreneurs? And we feature a few of them in the book, like our own Rich DeVos out of Grand Rapids, in Amway, Karen Buchwald Wright, who started with her father the Ariel Corporation. And before she died, the Ariel Corporation was the largest private producer of gas pumps, gas distribution systems, natural gas, out of Mount Vernon, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at some of the great entrepreneurs that happen to be people like great Green Bay Packer that we feature in the book. And so if you look at the history and the link, that's why I wrote the book. George is more the historian, and certainly I'm more the economist.
Was there something that you came across that made your eyebrows shoot up or that surprised you?
Well, what really made a great impression on me is that the Founding Fathers knew that they didn't have everything correct. They were greatly influenced by the Roman philosophers in the somewhat modern era, if you will, based on time. I was amazed at just how important people like John Locke and Adam Smith were. And they wrote great works before the U.S. Declaration of Independence was written. But they had a great influence on freeing up Europe And then that philosophy was part of the U.S., meaning reason for the U.S. becoming a free and independent state. And so that was surprising that they wrote a self-improving document, meaning with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, they knew that they didn't have it right. A lot of the founding fathers debated on whether or not slavery was right and what was the proper role of a woman in the U.S. economy at the time of the American Revolution. But they left in place the opportunity to change it and make the United States better. And that's what we talk about in the book. And we also talk about the economic system that they put in place that allowed the United States to become the greatest economic power in the history of the world, largely because of that second document, the Constitution, which we'll celebrate the 239th anniversary of Constitution this September.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because Alexander Hamilton obviously was the one who was looking to centralize banking, and he wanted to consolidate these debts. He thought that America would be in a much better position economically if they did that. And then, of course, when the French were looking towards the United States to play a pivotal role in their military experiences, and the United States said, look, we're not in a position to be doing that yet. Like, all of these things played a role into building, at least laying the foundation right into what we're experiencing today.
No, you're absolutely right. And simultaneously, if not for the French, if not for a number of leaders, from Poland and other European countries that assisted the founding fathers and assisted our military, our ragtag military that never should have. You know, if Vegas were alive back then, the odds of the founding fathers and the Continental Army, winning the American Revolution would have been close to zero.
You can place those bets on Kalshi right now, I hear. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's an interesting story in and of itself.
I agree.
But, as you look at today, the uniqueness of the United States is property rights, individual freedom, the rule of law, the fact that we welcome competition, we welcome invention and innovation. And, there's a lot of interesting debates going on today about free trade or should we use the national defense argument in protecting some of our industries. But overall, we've become the greatest economy in the history of the world with the strongest military, and even with our debt and the problems that we do have, the most admired country in the world. And it really was put in place by the great work of the founding fathers and the risk-taking. And then you look at the number of, inventions, innovations that have taken place in the U.S. And it's amazing that has happened in such a short period of time relative to the rest of the world. But then simultaneously, Chris, what we forget about is the longest-serving a democratic republic in the history of the world is the United States. And even though we're one of the youngest countries in terms of formation, look at all the things that have happened. The German economy has undergone dramatic political change. So has France. So has England since the founding of the United States. And we don't always realize that we are the oldest democratic republic in the world, where the masses of the population are free. We didn't get it right with slavery. We didn't get it right with women's rights. But again, it was a working, living document that allowed us to grow and change and become better. And as a result, we have the greatest economy ever. And the fact that you rarely ever hear of an American leaving the United States and giving up their citizenship to live elsewhere, but we have millions of people a year that want to legally or illegally come into the United States. If it's so bad and if socialism is so good, why are so many people flocking to be an American?
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I think all of those things, understanding that they weren't perfect, understanding that the system that they were building wasn't perfect, that they didn't have all the answers, I think that's part of the reason why the longest running democracy the world has ever known continues. And I think that's exactly right, right on the nose. I can't wait to read the book, Books and the Founding Fathers and Their Influence on America Today. Dr. Tim Nash, God bless you. We always appreciate chatting, and have a great 4th of July weekend, and we'll talk again very soon.
Thank you, Chris, and keep up the great work.
You got it, bud. Coming up on the other side, a new parasite making people sick. What is it? What's going on? We'll talk about it. It's Jared Morning. So this gastrointestinal parasitic infection is causing a number of people here in the state of Michigan to be sick. As of just yesterday, more than 225 cases have been identified in 21 Michigan counties, plus the city of Detroit, since June 22nd. And it's affecting people of all ages, 8 to 84 year old. But we don't know exactly where the outbreak is coming from. The U.S. CDC says that they are investigating. They're looking into it. That's at the federal level. Here in Michigan, they're doing the same thing. Dr. Natasha Bagdasarian is the chief medical executive here in the state of Michigan and joins me this morning to talk about, all right, doctor, ready? I'm going to give this a go. Cyclosporiasis. Huh?
Yes.
All right. Perfect. What is this? Where is this coming from?
Well, this is a parasite that infects the intestines and can cause terrible diarrhea. And this is not something that's spread directly from person to person. You're not catching it from other people. It has been implicated in outbreaks in the past, and those outbreaks have typically been coming from produce that is washed in contaminated water. And so our hypothesis right now is that this is probably an outbreak that is related to something that people are consuming. And again, those outbreaks in the past have been linked to things like raspberries, cilantro, and salad greens. So those are sort of some of the top things that we're thinking about as we investigate this large outbreak.
So diarrhea, abdominal cramps, nausea, low-grade fever in some cases. I think that would make a lot of sense, right? We hear that if you travel to other countries. If you go to Mexico, for example, they tell you not to drink the water there because of something like this happening. But because it's so widespread, does that change the thought process here in the investigative process? Do we have the doctor still? Dr. Bagdasarian, okay, do you hear me?
I can hear you again.
Okay.
I didn't hear you for a second. I'm so sorry.
Sorry about that. Just in terms of the how many people have gotten this in 21 different counties, I mean, it's all over the place.
It is, but we have to really remember that our food isn't hyper-local anymore. When we're talking about things like produce, if in fact this is coming from contaminated produce, you know, this may be at a restaurant that is supplying multiple locations, or this could be at a fast food chain. It could be in a grocery store that is, again, sending their food on to a few different locations. And so when we see outbreaks like this, we've got a whole team of disease investigators who are looking into what people have had to eat and drink, and they're cross-checking all of those things. And we are honing in on some potential suspects.
How difficult is it to go down this rabbit hole and track down where the potential source is coming from?
Well, you know, here's the thing. People sort of wonder what it is that public health does. Why do we need to have a public health system? And it's exactly for reasons like this. We've got a whole system that's been built up over decades of our local health departments, our lab testing, a whole database of information that comes in. And so we've got this system built, and the work is difficult. We're doing things like interviewing those who have been impacted, and then we're compiling that into spreadsheets and then cross-referencing and analyzing all of those spreadsheets. But this is the whole reason why it's important to have a great, robust public health system.
You mentioned that you were whittling it down. You feel like you've got a couple suspects. Is there anything that you can share on where this could be coming from yet?
You know, we don't have enough information to really share at this point. But what I can tell you is that past outbreaks have been related to produce, and so produce is at the top of our list. It may not be produce that's coming from a grocery store. We're thinking about restaurants. and fast food chains as well. And we're really advising people right now that if you're bringing produce into your home, we want to make sure that you're washing it really well, even if it says pre-washed on the bag. We want you to wash your produce really well. But if you're going out to eat, if you're going to restaurants, if you're going to fast food chains, just keep track of what it is you're eating. Because if you do become ill, number one, we want you to contact your healthcare provider so that you can get tested and treated. But number two, we really want to be able to compile that information so that, again, we can hone this down and we can find out exactly what is causing this outbreak.
So it doesn't seem like this is a deadly parasite, but the symptoms that you may have could linger for how long?
You know, they can linger for a while. People can actually have diarrhea that comes and goes even for a couple of weeks. However, you know, it is treatable. It's treated with a very simple, very common antibiotic, typically something like Bactrim. And within taking that Bactrim, symptoms are usually better within just a few days. So it is treatable for people who are healthy and have good immune systems. It can be more problematic for those who have weakened immune systems. So the message is here, if you are someone who thinks you may have been impacted, if you're having these symptoms, please see your healthcare provider, especially if you're someone with a weakened immune system.
How much then information are you sharing with the CDC from the state level? How much information are you getting from them?
Well, you know, I mentioned this whole network of disease detectives, and we've got our local health departments that are doing the boots on the ground investigation. They're the ones doing all the interviews. They're compiling that information, sending it on to the state for a full analysis. And then we're in communication with the CDC. So all of these entities are working together. We've got local health, we've got state health, and the CDC all working in tandem to figure out the source of this outbreak.
Dr. Natasha Bagdasarian, the chief medical executive for the state of Michigan. We appreciate your time. Thanks for getting up early with us this morning. Have a great holiday weekend. We'll talk soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Coming up on the other side, 7 o'clock hour, get you caught up on some of the headlines. Also, Dr. Steve Craig joins us in studio coming hour. Plus, we'll head out to Union Station in Washington, D.C., Ford celebrating a major milestone. And we're continuing on with our look at the Founding Fathers. It's all coming up on JR Morning.
Also with the long. Team Ream, only man there, able to steer it to Adams. Flicks it along Tillman. He's got Balogun making a run off him. Can he get around to that ball? To the deflection, Balogun scores! Flo Balogun, first to react to the deflection!
Flo Balogun strikes first for the United States, and they end up winning it 2-0 over Bosnia-Herzegovina yesterday in San Francisco. And what a scene. What a scene. I mean, it is unbelievable what we are seeing with this World Cup. And yes, does it make it better that the United States is on to the round of 16? Sure it does. Sure it does. It's like adding that little bit of sugar in your coffee. Yeah, coffee's great. But have you had it with cream and sugar? It's fantastic. Right? Like, it's just that much better. But what we're seeing out of this USA team is fantastic. They are playing really, really high-level soccer. And to be honest, I mean, going back to other appearances on the world stage, I don't, and look, Brian, I could be clouded by all of the pageantry and all of the excitement of fans from around the world that are going to Buc-ee's and that are eating brisket for the first time and that are trying to smuggle ranch dressing back to their home countries. I could be colored by all of that. The reality is, I don't remember the United States playing this well on a world stage before. And so it just makes everything better.
It does feel a little different this year. Even to me, who I'm not paying a lick of attention to this, but it does feel different than other past World Cups.
Well, and then here's what else happens is it's like the Pistons. It's like, yes, you're excited they're in the playoffs, or the Tigers, anybody. Yes, you're excited they're in the playoffs, but as you get further along, you want it more. You want to win. It becomes now.
That's how the Michigan basketball season was.
Sure. Absolutely. As you progress on in your season or in a tournament, March Madness, whatever it is, you just want it more. It becomes more realistic. There's only a couple of teams that are left, and you're one of them, and you could win the darn thing. And that's how it's starting to feel with this USA team. I mean, look out if they beat Belgium next week. I mean, look out.
Okay.
I'm telling you, people, you're going to tighten those screws. People are going to get way more excited. And then you're going to think, oh, my God, we have a chance here. Right? And again, they're not the best team in the field. Not even close.
And how much have you bet on this so far?
I've bet zero. You want to know why? It's because I don't want to be clouded by any of it. I want to just enjoy it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I want to go on the ride. Sure. Like, I know people that are like, well, I'll bet on the other team, and if USA wins, I'm happy. And then I'm like, well, yeah, but you lost money. I don't want to do that. I want to just enjoy it organically. So it's fantastic. Problem was, Flo Balogun ended up getting a red card. He got booted from that game with 36 minutes to play. And they ended up scoring again, courtesy of Malik Tillman.
9 minutes plus stoppage time to go.
But this run-up is telling me more power.
Look at how Vassell's giving up the entire right side of his goal. Tillman!
And that, I just can't get over that. I can't get over it. That put the United States up for good, 2-0. Malik Tillman, absolute beauty of a curler in on that free kick.
You know what the best part of soccer is, though? The announcers. It really is.
Absolutely. Also, if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Go on YouTube. Gus Johnson used to call soccer games.
Really?
Yeah. This was like a side gig he did for Fox maybe 10, 15 years ago. But imagine Gus Johnson.
I am right now.
Doing
he
soccer.
He can hit those high notes, yeah.
Yes.
Ooh, I got to check that out.
It is very, very good. That's your homework for today. Meanwhile, these two climbers that climbed to the top of the Empire State Building, absolutely unbelievable. They climbed to the spire of the Empire State Building through a hatch in the 102nd floor. And these two people actually were the subject of this Netflix documentary. Jason has seen it, said you gotta see it.
Must watch.
Must watch TV. And Angela Nicolou and Ivan Berkus are the ones who climbed to the top of the building. They put a flag on the top of the building, and then they got engaged. The man proposed to the woman. They got engaged, and everybody's like, wait a second, there's two people on the top of the Empire State Building. Wait, well, what? They're putting a flag. What does that flag say? Oh, the flag says, when the power of love beats the love of power, the world knows kindness. Oh, okay. Oh, wait, hold on. We're seeing on social media that these two people are now engaged. Oh, well, it's like 10 degrees cooler up there, and it's not that windy. And I'm like, hold on. Two people just climb to the top of the Empire State Building in the middle of Manhattan.
Good luck to any man that's proposing to their woman today trying to top that.
Fair point. You can't just like go to your local fireworks celebration and get down on one knee.
Honey, I decided to propose in a place where neither one would obviously die if we slipped.
You'd have to, the counter to that, though, was like, what are you climbing to the top with me? Yeah. I ain't doing it. I know you're not doing it. Let's not do it. Yeah, I don't know how the coverage went from, well, that's unbelievable and kind of a security threat to like, well, it's kind of cute. It's wild to me.
Well, it is. If you watch this documentary, they're running around. They're eluding security and construction workers.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is insane. Why would anybody put me through this? But it kind of is. It's kind of sweet that they're doing this together, I guess.
Oh, geez. Will you stop it, please?
Come on.
Unbelievable.
A couple that climbs together, dies together.
Yeah.
They're not dead.
They're not dead. They're not dead. Yeah.
I have a hobby, too. My hobby will never risk my life.
Wasn't there like a tightrope walker?
Yes.
Like from a famous tightrope walking family?
And he walked
family?
Between the World Trade Centers at one point.
And yep. But he died.
He did.
He died He doing that.
I don't know
he
if he
fell.
Died or if he just fell and was really horrifically injured.
I mean, regardless, my point is.
We'll end this.
If you, yeah. If you push those boundaries.
Not worth it.
Yeah.
If you roll the dice.
At some point.
Eventually you win.
Right. The law of averages would say something is bound to go wrong at some point.
Exactly.
Maybe it doesn't, but at some point, that's what the numbers say. 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rock your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. Social commerce, not just social media to drive the power of influencing, social commerce, which combines the power of social media's influencing with the ability to close the purchase of a product at the moment you've been influenced to do so. It's hot, and it's getting hotter. Now, the most well-known example of social commerce is that conducted by the TikTok shop, but it's not the only example of social commerce doing well. While Facebook doesn't get the social commerce hype TikTok and Instagram do, the fact is it owns what brands actually want. Scale plus buying intent. Per Sprout's 2026 data, 85% of consumers have a Facebook profile and 40% go there specifically to find products. And 70% of marketing leaders say it drives the strongest business impact of any platform. Now, unlike TikTok and Facebook's social commerce application, your shop acts like a discovery engine that drives shoppers to your own website to close the sales. Facebook Shops in 2026 is a discovery and trust machine, not a checkout button. Win the browse and believe stage with video, collections, fast service, and real user-generated content, then send that intent to a site built to close. To win at social commerce, Sprout offers these tips to keep in mind. Lead with short-term video. Facebook users engage most with sub-60-second branded video. Tag the exact product in reels and stories so viewers go straight from clip to cart. Track revenue, not just vanity metrics. A reel can rack up likes and drive zero product clicks, but sales are the ultimate metric to track. So instead of tracking vanity metrics like likes, track clicks, collection views, conversion rate, and customer questions instead. Look, if we're going to succeed in small business today, we've simply got to be everywhere that existing buyers are. And we're forced to stay current with consumer expectations with respect to where and how they can purchase what it is that your business offers. Social commerce, including that which is on Facebook, is emerging as one channel you simply can't afford to neglect. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, and that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
All right, it is a Thursday, and as always, we welcome in Dr. Steve Craig, president of Craig Consulting Group and Craig Counseling Services. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
By the way, the baby blue looks good on you.
Oh, well, thank you. I dress up for you.
Yeah, you look very nice. Right. Renee Vitale is joining us.
I dress
as
up
well.
For her. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Ah,
exactly
you shouldn't
right.
have.
Exactly.
No, really, you shouldn't have.
It's getting hot in here.
Yeah, we need her help.
Right. Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
You know, I don't.
Yeah.
Dr. Steve comes in and I'm like, hey, guess what? Here's a new one for you.
I need to start coming in like
really, he
50
needs to start
minutes
charging
early.
Me.
Right,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We do have that couch back there in our lobby area now, so
right.
we might be utilizing
you have
that.
A mobile unit?
All right, well, let's see. Dr. Steve, my son and daughter don't get along, and as a parent, all I really want is for my adult children to be friends. But they struggle because my son mistreats her on a regular basis. She has significant self-esteem issues and has many anxiety issues. I've tried to support her, but his behavior is making it worse. And she just doesn't want him around any longer. She's currently at nursing school, and last week, in front of his sister, he told our neighbor in a very excited and complimentary way that she would make a great nurse and she should apply to nursing school. He has never once told his sister that, and she was in tears. And he commented about how much weight he has lost while his sister struggles with her weight. Again, being completely insensitive to her insecurities and her struggles, and completely ignoring her feelings. Every time they are together, he says rude things and she ends up in tears. But when I tell him she is sensitive and fragile and can't handle things, he just ignores me or waves me off while his sister continues to struggle. How can I get a rude brother to stop destroying his sister and disrupting the family when he just doesn't care?
Oof. Wow.
All right, Renee. You go ahead. Yeah, you take this.
Save Chris. Chris is going to explode.
But I feel like that maybe he has the insecurity issues. And so as a defense mechanism, perhaps he is, making fun of her, treating her poorly because he's perhaps jealous of her success. And so he finds any little thing that he can one up her on, like her weight, knowing that he's pushing her buttons by congratulating the neighbor. And so perhaps he's the one that needs to visit you for some therapy. Honestly, I think there's something deep rooted there.
All right. So then what does the person, this mother or father, do then? Because, you know, tell him to.
I'm assuming that he's said to her, listen, or to him, listen, you're really hurting your sister here. Are you aware? Maybe it is a situation that he doesn't realize he's doing these things. And he's just a bully big brother that never grew up. Maybe he's not self-aware.
Bully big brother. Bully, you go.
First of all, I do love my sister, but I have been, I've done some things in the past that I'm not proud of. Now, here's what I'd say. I don't know. At some point, the onus is on the sister here. And I was going to ask you how old these kids were.
Yeah,
but then
I
went back and looked, but it says adult children. So they're adults.
We'll call them in their 20s or 30s.
At some point, I don't, and I should say this too. As a parent, you always want your kids to get along and get together well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And you would push for that. I would push for that certainly. But at some point, don't you have to kind of wash your hands of it and go, wait. You're an adult. You may have some insecurities. But you're doing your own thing. Look what you got going on. You're a nursing student. You've got yourself set up. What do you care what your brother has to say? Now, if he's got something nice to say and you guys can make peace, God bless. But the brother is just being mean, or whether it's knowingly or not. But at some point, you wipe your hands of it and go, this is something you guys got to deal with. I'm not getting in the middle of it anymore.
So Chris is callous and indifferent, right?
That's what I've gathered.
Well, Renee, in this one, I'm going to be with Chris.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, right. Wow.
But let's hope this one's not on record, right? Because then I'll have to, you know.
to defend it.
But this is one of those things where I think our world has gone crazy. Because it's terrific that we've now developed a sense in the world that we have to pay attention to people's feelings and recognize them. But that doesn't mean every feeling is right or needs to be placated or enabled, because so many of our feelings are irrational, dysfunctional, selfish, manipulative,
sure,
overblown. I mean, our feelings aren't this nice little package of logical little things. Most of mine are crazy, selfish, you know, but sure. I don't get to say something, you know, that is really irrational or dysfunctional and expect everybody to address it and handle it. So, you know, I just try and think of examples that, and I hear these things in my office and I'm like, wow, what's happened in the world? Like, I heard one recently where the husband is friendly to the mail lady. Like, she shows up at the door, he doesn't know her
just
name.
Nice.
He's like, just nice kind. To her. Well, thank you, have a nice day. Mm-hmm. And the wife is so jealous. And then they're sitting in my office and she's furious that he, you know, no one is appreciating her jealousy and, you know, what's he doing? And it's like, or you could just handle that he's friendly. Like, why do we have to make a big deal about every emotion you have?
So you're saying we get inside our own heads and become our own worst enemies.
We become our own worst enemies. But we've developed this world that we don't differentiate between which feelings are appropriate and which are just irrational.
My feelings are the ones that need to be validated.
Mine need to be validated. Right. If I have it, it needs to be addressed and talked about. But so I would say there's...
Is it different if you're 14? If your kids are 14 and 13?
Well, if they're 14 and 13, we as parents have to do the job of teaching that your feelings matter, but other people aren't responsible for your feelings. Mm. So you have to learn how to handle things and be okay with it. Now, that doesn't mean that people, on the other hand, get to just be rude, you know, blatantly rude and mean, but there's a certain level of stuff that just are our feelings that just happen because we have our insecurities or whatever, and we don't need to make a big deal out of everybody's feelings all the time. And so when I read this, I'm going to call it the mother, but I don't know if it's a mother or dad or father, that every feeling this sister has, they rush to, oh my God, she's fragile and she can't handle that someone else might get a compliment. Well, to me, you have to say to her, honey, you have to be able to handle that there's other people in the world. And sometimes, I mean, that doesn't mean you're slighted. It doesn't, but to to wring your hands and everything. If she's in tears every time the brother shows up and says anything that's a normal way of being, then we're actually not teaching her how to we're creating a problem because we're not teaching her how to handle anything.
Life.
And that life. And then next week he says something innocuous again, but she's upset and we all have to run and take care of it.
Mm.
We have to pay attention to people's feelings, but not every single one of them. That's the problem that we've run into.
Another good one with Dr. Steve. We appreciate you as always. Thanks for coming in. We'll take a break. More coming up. Get you caught up on the headlines. Also, Ford celebrating a major milestone in D.C. It's coming up. Well, we are all celebrating the 250th celebration of the United States of America and this wonderful grand experiment. But there are few companies that have had the impact on the United States like Ford Motor Company. And as all of the celebrations in Washington, D.C. continue, one at Union Station I think is particularly exciting, and that's Driving America Forward, a Ford experience at Washington's Union Square. And Ford was founded in 1903, and Henry Ford and the Model T and and everything that spun off of that and to the cars that we see driving today, but to Ford's critical role in the fabric of America, whether that is getting you from point A to point B in style or helping troops complete their missions in consequential wars all around the world. And to talk about this wonderful exhibit is Ted Ryan of Ford Archives and the Heritage Brand Manager at the Blue Oval. Ted, good morning. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me on this morning. Yes, I'm sitting in the middle of the exhibit right now looking at people taking pictures of my cars and of the exhibit labels, and someone just snapped the photo of the 1941 Ford GP we have on display.
That is so cool. What is it like to be there amidst all of the celebration, but then Ford highlighting their rich history?
It's been amazing. So we have 10 vehicles on display at Union Station at this free exhibit. It was opened yesterday on July 1st and will be open until July 14th. So we have 10 vehicles, and we also have archive displays, cases that tell the story forward. Ford and pop culture, answering the call during World War II as the backbone of work, all these different categories. Some of the vehicles are just spectacular. I have Jay Leno's 1934 Ford pickup truck. I have a Ford GP. I have the Bronco that won Baja in 1968, the last Model T ever made. Just some amazing vehicles, and it's been exciting to see people walk in and take all the photos and take it in.
And what's been the reaction from folks that are taking it in?
It's been fantastic, and I've been here doing tours and meeting different groups, and people are surprised that it's there, but then they are surprised by the diversity of the vehicles. A 1956 T-Bird on display. I've got a 1951 tractor. And then some of the surprise and delight moments that we have a big panel on answering the call where we show the role that we played during World War II, and even things like Ford built mission control and helped put a man on the moon. Mm. Most of the people aren't going to realize that. We're across the street from the Postal Museum here, so I made sure to include the fact that Ford invented the zip code reading device that will sort your mail by zip code. Ford is for 124 of America's 200 years.
And what does that mean personally for you and for the people on your team that are in charge of being the good stewards of the history of Ford?
It's tremendous. And my job as the archivist at Ford Motor Company, you don't want to always look back, but if you look back and it gives you a clear vision of the future. The thing that jumps out to me, and I've been asked about it over and over, is the variety of the cars. Ford has adapted and has built cars for the public that they want at that particular moment in time. The Mustang that we have behind me is a perfect example. Introduced in 1964 at the World's Fair. This was actually the Mustang that was part of the ride at the World's Fair. But that was the perfect car for the perfect generation, for the baby boomer generation. So every time a generation is looking for something new, Ford has been there. So as you look back, you realize it's in our DNA to always produce the vehicles that America is going to want at that particular point in time.
So you've been doing this for a long time. And yes, to look forward, you do have to look back. And you have to look back at the heritage and the history and what you've accomplished as a company. Are there vehicles that the company comes out with that you go, yeah, that's going to be at this same display in 50 years from now, or this is going to be another one of those, oh my gosh, this is changing the landscape, or we're doing something that is going to change something down the road. Can you spot those?
You can spot them, or you can try to spot them. We have a panel on the development of the assembly line and how Ford changed automotive fabrication forever. It's never going to be the same after the assembly line. Well, with our new universal vehicle, we're creating a new vision of the assembly line. So I haven't seen the vehicle yet, but I've been part of the process. So you assume or you hope that vehicle is going to have the same power that the Model T did in changing industry. But some vehicles, like the Ford Taurus, I love it. We don't have one on display, but that car changed America when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was an amazing vehicle that brought aerodynamic design back into automobiles for a while. So if you had asked somebody about the Ford Taurus 5 years ago, they would have shrugged at it, but I would love to get one for my collections.
No doubt about that. 123 years of heritage for Ford Motor Company. It's on display as part of the 250th celebration and celebration down in Union Station in Washington, D.C. Love the fact that Ford's there. And Ted Ryan, we appreciate your time and all the hard work that you do to bring these experiences to the American people. Certainly, we know about it here, but seeing it is completely different. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you got it. I think that, again, earlier this week I read you the poll of, like, things people, how people feel about the United States, or what the biggest food is here, the most popular food that defines America, or technology that defines America. I think that it's almost too difficult to pin down in a lot of categories, but you look at the ultimate change of the early 1900s to when the first automobile was created, like the 50 years between like 1900 and 1950, massive leaps, massive achievements. And then you go from 1950 to 2000, massive achievements. And then you go from 2000 to now, like we're slowing down because we have created so many unbelievable things that they don't register the same way. Nothing, maybe aside from artificial intelligence and AI technology, but aside from that, we haven't experienced any sort of great leap and bound that is changing the landscape unbelievably. So while that's why you got to look in the past to go, oh my God, the invention of the automobile was ours. It was Ford's, but then it spread like wildfire, and all of a sudden horses become obsolete. The work that you are able to do, or the expediency in which you are able to travel now, completely changes your entire life. So I love the fact that Ford is there highlighting their history, their tie to the growth of America. Absolutely fantastic. Coming up on the other side, we continue our look into the founding fathers. John Jay steps into the spotlight. It's coming up on JR Morning here on. So I'm really excited for this because we've been talking about the founding fathers for the last couple of weeks. And obviously, Washington and Jefferson get the most pub. But there is one instrumental founding father that does seem to be forgotten a bit, and he was incredibly important, and despite what Hamilton the musical says, Hamilton was generally forgot about, but Hamilton is on our money. He did create the treasury. He created this whole form of banking that we didn't even think was possible. But most people don't even remember John Jay as being a founding father or an influential figure of the era. He, of course, with Alexander Hamilton and James Madison co-authored the Federalist Papers. He negotiated the Treaty of Paris that officially ended the Revolutionary War. He was the first Chief Justice of the United States. And he even helped shape the nation's early foreign policy. And there are some critiques of him, but I think as history has gone on, as time has gone on, We look back at John Jay as being an incredibly important figure into the birth of this nation. Let's talk about it. Jonathan Den Hartog, the chair and professor of the Howard College of Arts and Sciences at Samford University. Professor, it's great to have you.
Well, good morning. Thanks for the invitation. And, you know, I said I will go anywhere and talk to anybody to let them know about how important John Jay was for the American Revolution. So this is right where we need to be.
I agree. Why would you go through those lengths to talk about John Jay? He doesn't get the publicity that I think he deserves. But what is it about him that gets kind of swept under the rug?
Yeah, so I think I really think the amount of work that he put into the American Revolution to make it succeed means he was vitally, even centrally important for the revolution. And so I actually think he does deserve to be named in that same breath with Washington. Nobody's equal to Washington, but Adams, Jefferson, and I think we should say John Jay, because he devotes his entire professional career, 27 years of public service, nonstop, without a break, to make the country succeed. And what he brings, I think, is a real practical sense of what needs to be done. So yes, you can have the flowery language, or you can have the passion or the energy, but you also need people who can get things done. And that was what John Jay was doing in the revolution.
Let's Quentin Tarantino this thing. Let's go back now to the early life of John Jay. Washington came from money, but he struggled. He wanted to be a British officer, and Thomas Jefferson came from great wealth, and his trajectory was different than, say, John Adams's was. But what was early life for John Jay like?
Yeah, I would put him solidly middle class. His father was a businessman who had done pretty well, and that allowed him to provide for John some private tutoring and then a college education, right? Not many people had a college education in the colonies, but John Jay was able to get one, and he was preparing for a professional career. He wanted to be a lawyer. He became a lawyer, and he thought he was going to have a very straightforward professional career in Manhattan. And then as conflict with Great Britain ramped up, well, everything changed for him. Now, the one other thing I think we should mention is the Jay family has this interesting mix of immigrants, backgrounds and domestic backgrounds. So many of their forebears were French who had come to America because they had been persecuted. And so they always had that memory of desiring to have liberty and religious liberty. And then they were joining in with the English who were in the colonies as well.
And so what prompted him then to join the revolution? What was the thing that was the springboard for him to say, no, we have to do our own thing?
Yeah, there are kind of two steps to that. I think he is concerned about the legal standing of the colony. So he's thinking about kind of constitutional rights from the get-go, from the early 1770s. And so he's kind of brought along as this professional man who does want to stick up for the American colonies. And so that's going to then bring him into politics. He's going to get elected to the Continental Congress, both the first and the second. And so all the way through, he is on one hand saying, we need to stand up for our rights, but also let's not get over our skis. He's always one of those voices of don't go too far too fast. Mm. And so then he holds that even into 1776, where he says, if there is any way we can have reconciliation, let's do that, because that would be better than war and bloodshed. But then in that moment of July 1776, he says, not only have all the colonies spoken, but in fact, the British have gone too far, and now they really are going after our lives. Even property, I think he might compromise on. But when our lives are threatened, it is right and good to seek to be independent.
And I just have 30 seconds left here. I'm sorry. I wish we could spend more time on John Jay. I think he's fantastic. He was criticized for the 1794 treaty with Great Britain, although that eventually fell apart in the War of 1812. What happened there?
Yeah, so just really quickly, because of the French Revolution, Britain and France are at war. The U.S. is in the middle of it. And so new president George Washington says, who can I send who will be our best representative in England? And his answer is John Jay. Mm. So Jay goes and has to negotiate a treaty, which he realizes is not the best possible treaty, but it's the best treaty that could be had given the circumstances. And when he brings it back, there's a real partisan divide. Like there is political polarization, and his political opponents like burn him in effigy. They hate the treaty so much.
Wow.
But a lot of the administrator supporters say, we're grateful for it. It's going to keep us out of the war, and it's going to expand our trade options. So it's much debated. And I do think over time, historians looking back say, it was probably the best treaty that we could have gotten. So I want to give Jay credit for that, even though not everybody loved it at the time.
Not everybody loved it at the time, but the nation was, what, 20 years old at that point and just trying to keep the fabric all put together. Jonathan Den Hartog, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I wish we could spend 2 hours on this subject, but I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for this opportunity. And again, I think people should dig into John Jay. He was an important founding father.
I agree completely. Thank you for your time. We'll take a break. 8 o'clock hour coming up. It's Jay Morning.
That's a look along. Team Ream, only man there. Able to steer it to Adams. Flicks it along Tillman. He's got Balligan making a run off him. Can he get around to that ball? To the deflection. Balligan scores. Flo Balligan. First to react to the deflection.
U.S. wins 2-0 over Bosnia-Herzegovina. And boy, it was absolutely fantastic. Absolute marvelous soccer being played out in the Bay Area, San Francisco. And look, Flo Balogun scores that opening goal. Absolutely huge. Absolutely crucial. Then he gets a red card. And he's out of the game. Oh, and by the way, Flo Balogun won't be able to play next week against Belgium either. And so now you do change the complexity of your path, but also you change the complexity of the game yesterday. And by the way, whether the red card was deserved or not, that's up for debate. I don't think it was deserved, but they use VAR, which is video assistant refereeing, and that came back. Are you laughing, Brian?
No, not
at all. Are you laughing at VAR? At the assistant video referee?
I'm wondering why we don't use it in sports here.
Well, we started to use it a little bit in baseball with the challenge system.
I'm also trying to figure out how this works, because you're saying they're playing games, but then they're playing games and now they're moving on, but they played a game. And then is this like it's not like the NCAA tournament where you play and one moves on and one goes away.
Now you do, yes.
Now it is, okay.
Yeah, so initially when the tournament started, you're in group stages. The group stage.
And I don't understand what that means.
So you get four teams in a group.
Okay.
And then you play three games. Based on wins, losses, or ties, you get a certain amount of points. The team with the most points comes out of the group. Well, the two teams come out of each group.
Sort of like how the NHL counts points in a way.
Yeah, I mean, that's just games. If you win the game, you're up 1-0. If you lose the game, you're tied 1-1.
Okay.
So it's whoever has the most points comes out of those group stages. Then when you get to the round of 32, which is what we're in currently, it's win or go home. So Bosnia-Herzegovina, they're headed out.
Okay.
They're out.
I'm just trying to figure this out.
U.S. moves on.
Everybody's engaged with this so much. And it's like, well, maybe I should need to figure out how this actually works.
Well, now
I understand how the American sports work, even though I don't follow them.
Yes.
This is, like, I don't know what's going on.
Well, and here's how overtime works. So you've got extras. So you've got extra time.
Okay.
So you get 15 minutes. Then you get a halftime of overtime. Then you get another 15 minutes. And then after that, if you're still tied, you go to penalty kicks.
Okay.
And then penalty kicks, you get five. Whoever has the most goals at the end of those five kicks moves on. If it's a tie, then you just go to the next kick. And then the next kick. That's how that works. So that's how you determine
the winner. Well, at least we get a winner. It's not like everybody ties.
And at this stage, there are no ties.
Okay.
At this stage, you win or you go home.
And now there's 16 teams left.
There will be at the end of the group round of 32. Okay.
Yep, then we're talking to Keith Baldwin at 8:19.
Yes, we will talk with Keith Baldwin at the Regal Eagle coming up at 8:19.
Okay.
But it was a fantastic experience. I mean, the electricity in the stadium was coming through on the television. And again, even if you're a casual soccer fan at this point, you have to be involved in this. I mean, it is so absolutely spectacular. We got Take Me Home West Virginia, Mountain Mama, Take Me Home, playing that song, Country Road. I mean, they were playing Elvis in the stadium after the game. Freebird starts ringing out. I mean, it's spectacular.
That, to me, is more interesting than the games. Now, I played soccer in high school. That was what we did. We didn't have a football team. So I understand the game slightly. How this all works, I don't know. But the outside the game stuff, to me, it's fascinating. And it's like, it's like when people come to the Fisher Building here. I've been coming here since 1989. Mm-hmm. I don't even see it anymore. Sure. I'm coming to work.
Right.
And when you bring somebody who hasn't been here walk in that lobby and stop, that's what this feels like to me. People going, this Buc-ee's. Oh my gosh, this Buc-ee's. It's like, it's Buc-ee's.
Do you know what it tells me? Is that people love people. We love each other.
Oh, absolutely.
I got the Haitians and the Scottish and the Germans partying with it almost made me cry this morning. I'm in the commercial break watching this video of a Korean fan and a Mexican fan standing in the stands together, arms around each other, hugging. Like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's when you get to the power level. It's when you get to people that have to decide laws and all of that. That's when it gets muddied.
Well, they want to divide us up. And we shouldn't be divided. This should be us all the time. Is like, I think when we go over to their country, it's probably the same thing where we go, oh my gosh, I've never seen this before. And I go, yeah, we do this every Tuesday. I don't know what you're talking about. But it's fun to watch them come here. And it's like, I've seen people, they're eating Kentucky Fried Chicken for the first time. Yeah. And they're going to Buc-ee's for the first time. And I saw somebody, they went to Cracker Barrel. I was like, I've never seen such a place. This is, it's like, it's just Cracker Barrel.
I saw this one Japanese fan eating a piece of brisket that I'm like legitimately jealous of. Like, I've never had brisket like that.
And you've never enjoyed it probably
either. No, and he's just like, I don't think his eyes could have rolled further back into his head.
And to me, that's the fun of this. The games are great, and I'm glad everybody's here. But watching everybody enjoy, and I think it sends a nice message, like you said, that we have more in common than we have.
I had seen I had seen somebody on Twitter, X, whatever, say something like, it's amazing that a soccer tournament in the United States has done more for international relations than the UN.
Correct. I think that's exactly right.
It's so true.
It should be.
It's people realizing that whatever those stereotypes are, are not legitimate. Although, I did see two Japanese fans go to a bass fishing stop with guns. And they're like holding guns, and they're like, the manager comes over, gives them hats, and they're like, woo.
Well, when we went overseas a few years ago, one of our tour guides told us that was his goal, his dream. He was saving money to come here, rent a van in New York, and drive to Texas so he could shoot a gun. And I was like, you don't really have to drive to Texas to shoot a gun. You could probably do it right there in New York at a shooting range. Really? Really? He thought you had to go to Texas and
Texas?
Yeah, no. I saw that video. You sent it to me. It's like this is so funny. These guys, like, but it's hard to get guns everywhere.
But it's also just, it's not malicious. They're like, oh,
no,
my God.
No. It wasn't like this. I got to have one of these. It was like, they were the guys that held
the
44
magnum. It's like going to see
the Louvre. Yes.
You're like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm holding this thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Yes.
The people that climbed to the Empire State Building yesterday, also unbelievable. They got through a hatch on the 102nd floor. They get to the top. And they hang this flag, and then they get engaged. And my only question is, why aren't people saying that this is like a serious security threat? It's like, oh, they got engaged. Isn't that nice? They were on a documentary on Netflix. Aw, no. These people are out of their minds.
It was all criminal until then.
Yes, it's exactly right. Also, no state budget yet. The July 1st self-imposed deadline by lawmakers has passed, so those negotiations continue. Oh, Jason, I know you're very excited about this. Today is the rehearsal dinner for Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. There will be 100 people there. 100 people there at the rehearsal dinner. July 3rd, tomorrow, apparently, is the wedding where 1,000 people will be there. Hooray.
Why don't you just get married on a beach or something? You're just going to draw attention to Madison Square Garden.
I saw this report where they were like building a castle inside Madison Square Garden. And I'm like, hey, you know, there are castles in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you're Taylor Swift. King Charles would probably officiate your wedding.
Or just get married and leave us all alone with it.
I mean, you don't have to build a stage in Madison Square Garden to get married. I'm convinced these people are sick. They have to be in the news cycle. Also, Tigers win 6-2, took them 11, but they sweep the Yankees. And that, Jason.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my cue.
That's your cue. A winning streak.
All right, coming up on the other side, we're talking World Cup soccer. Keith Baldwin with the Regal Eagle joins us. It's Chair Morning. Well, here's your chance to win a trip to see two country superstars, Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan, in Vegas. Double the hits, one unforgettable night. We've got your flights, hotel, and concert tickets covered. The Double Down Tour, Aldean and Bryan co-headlining with special guest John Party and Chase Matthews, all live under the neon lights. Prizes provided by BBR Music Group. Text this hour's national keyword, EASY, to 95819. That's EASY to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. Official rules and more information is at WJR.com. Well, the United States beats Bosnia-Herzegovina. They now have a July 6th meeting, USA and Belgium. That's on tap. That is slated for Monday. And then that is in the round of 16. I don't know what it is. This team's got a little juice. They're playing really, really good soccer. Let's talk about it with Keith Baldwin, the co-owner of the Regal Eagle here in Detroit. Keith, good to have you back.
Hey, good to be back. Hope you're enjoying the games.
We really are. I don't know what's – I may be blinded by the fact that we are being treated to a wonderful tournament. But outside of that, I mean, the fans, the whole fan experiences, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. It's just so spectacular, and people getting to experience the United States the way that I think some of us even take for granted sometimes. So I might be colored by a lot of that, but it feels like this is a much different USA team than we've seen in any international play. And they're playing really good soccer right now.
Yeah, they're playing with a lot of confidence and a lot of belief. And if people saw last night's game, they felt in control most of that game. And even in soccer, obviously, in any sport, you're going to face some adversity. And their main player got a red card. But I think next round, that's going to be tough for them without him. But I think they've got the belief to figure that they've got a strong squad. And whoever they bring in, they still got a great chance.
And this is where things start to get a little tight. And we still have a couple of games here in the round of 32 that we got to get sorted out here. But the path here for the United States, Belgium, and then they've got the winner of either Portugal or Croatia or Spain and Austria. So the path seems to be there for them to get to the next round. But, I mean, you start looking across the board, Canada has looked really good. Especially in particular games. Brazil has come away with a couple of squeakers, but they look good. England looks very good as well. So this seems to be a really loaded field.
Yeah, now you're obviously teams starting to get eliminated, and you're going to get some real powerhouse matchups. Spain playing Austria today and Portugal, Croatia. That puts, if they both win, the favorites, Spain and Portugal, that puts us in course for a Spain-Portugal game in the next round, which will be a huge matchup. And Mexico-England's a huge matchup. And, yeah, this is where the games really start pitting the superpowers against each other.
I think a couple of weeks ago we talked about it, and it felt like the stars were coming through, right? The world's most popular players, the most skilled players were coming through. Do you feel still that way, or do you feel like the supporting cast have come through? Because that's kind of how it felt like the last couple of games. It feels like it's more team, complete team games.
Well, it is a complete team. You have to win with a complete team. But if you saw the Norway game that they won, Erling Haaland did not have a great game, but he popped up with a couple of minutes, with 8 minutes left, and scored.
Right.
And that was his moment of the game. So like Michael Jordan hitting the game-winning shot. these stars, they all they need is moments. You know, Harry Kane had a good all-around game yesterday, mm-hmm. but his world-class finish won the game for England. And, you know, France beating Sweden pretty easily. Their stars were scoring great goals. So it obviously takes a team, but your team can set up the star to produce the moment to win the game.
You know, I think it's interesting, too, because once you start getting into these games, even the game that Germany got eliminated in, right, I as a fan, am feeling the intensity, right? I understand what's at stake here for these countries, especially a team like Germany. But even my kids, who are not as into soccer as I am, they feel the tension, the intensity when you get into these later portions of the game and there's a lot on the line. I almost feel like as a collective, this country is starting to feel that way about this game. We feel it in football and in baseball, in the playoffs, things like that. But I think a lot of people are starting to get that there's a lot on the line here.
Oh, yeah, it's the timing as well. And, you know, the World Series, the Super Bowl, they happen every year. The World Cup is every 4 years. And as a player, you're lucky to play in one. If you're a great player, you maybe play in 2 to 3. If you're the world's best ever, like Messi, you play in 6. But really, it comes only every 4 years. So when you're eliminated, you know it's a long time before you get a chance to put it right. So every game has a lot of pressure. And we've seen the pressure in those penalty shootouts. The Morocco, Netherlands, the Paraguay, Germany, if you took all those penalties, they only scored 54% of those penalties in those two shootouts, which is a very low number for a penalty conversion. And it's because of pressure.
Business is good?
What's that?
Business is good?
Oh, business is great. I mean, we've been absolutely packed. It's been fun atmosphere. And the Mexico-England game will be quite intense yes. down at the Regal Eagle. But as I said, it's going to be a celebration. You see these nations partying together. There'll be a lot of English there. There'll be a lot of Mexican fans there. And even though one fan base is going to be devastated at the end of the game, it's going to be a celebration.
And you, unlike bars in Boston, won't run out of beer. Keith Baldwin, thank you for your time. As always, we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Absolutely fantastic. And again, we're lucky that we've got these places here because you go to Europe, they have these bars all over the place. Bars like the Regal Eagle exist in every small town where you go to see your hometown team, and then they get exponentially more populated when the national team is playing. So it's absolutely fantastic. We've got a jewel like that here in the city of Detroit. Take a break. More coming up on JR Morning. All right, so I think I've said this before. I tend to be a little forthright with the kids. Jake's 8 now. Henry's 4.5. I try my best not to sugarcoat things. Why? Because the world can be a tough place, and if I shield you or sugarcoat things, it doesn't help you in the long run. You don't learn to cope with things, or you don't learn to adapt to your scenario or your situation or whatever. And I think it gets, I get in my head sometimes about it because I don't know if it's always the right thing given their ages. But we've had some pretty frank conversations. Like, I'll give you an example, a couple, before I tell you my latest story. So, like, for example, one day, Jake had to go to the doctor and he needed to get shots. And he's like, well, why do we get shots? And I'm like, well, he protects you and make sure you don't get sick. Why? Well, because that's what we have. It's available to us. And so in order for you not to get really sick with something serious, then you got to get the shots. Okay. Why? And I'm like, because medicine has advanced. And so we have these things now so you don't get sick. And he's like, why? I'm like, because for a long time, people have gotten sick and then they found a way to stop getting sick. Well, why? Because, and I ended up down the rabbit hole of like, well, in Asia or in Africa, they may not have this. And so you have to take advantage. And they were like befuddled by it. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I possibly doing this? Another example was Jake, I pick him up from school one day and he goes, Dad, you know, the girls, I didn't have a very good day. And I go, why? He goes, well, the girls were picking on me. And I go, oh, they were picking on you. What were they saying? He's like, they kept coming up behind me and poking my shoulder or rubbing my hair, and then they would run away from me laughing. And I go, oh.
They're doing a little slap and tickle.
I was like, yeah, I don't think they were.
They were flirting.
I don't think they were picking on you, my man.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think they were. And I'm like, I understand that's confusing to you. And there are other going to be other instances where it's going to be confusing for you.
And as you get older, it only gets worse.
But I just, I think you're okay.
Aww.
I didn't go down that rabbit hole.
Right.
But I did hold
Thank
off
goodness.
On that. So when Jake was one, my mom bought a fish for her house.
Okay.
For Jake. And she said, what do you want to name the fish? It was a goldfish. It was like one of those little Meyer 10-cent goldfish, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, Fishy Elmo. Henceforth, you shall be known as Fishy Elmo.
It's catchy.
So Fishy Elmo died last week.
Aww.
Or this week. Earlier this week. Died. And Fishy Elmo was 7 years old.
Wow.
It was like a full-blown carp. I'm like, should we fillet this? Like, a little caper and lime? I don't know. It could
Stop
be good.
It.
No, no, no. So it was a big fish. It grew.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. It was actually a beautiful fish. So Fishy Elmo dies. So my mom texts me and says, it was just two emojis. It was a fish and then a sad face.
Aww.
And I said, uh-oh, Fishy Elmo died. So she goes, what are you going to do? And I go, I'm going to tell him Fishy Elmo died.
Yeah.
So I say to the kids, I'm like, hey, when you go to grandma's tomorrow, Fishy Elmo won't be there. And they're like, why? And I'm like, because Fishy Elmo died. And they're like, died? I'm like, yeah. Like, nothing lives forever.
Right.
Certainly goldfish.
Right.
And they were like, really? I'm like, yeah, no. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, processing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, then the other night, we're putting the kids to bed. Henry says to my wife, can I see your heart? She's like, no, it's got to stay in there. He's like, what happens if it comes out? She's like, well, you die. It's got to stay in your body to help your body. And he's like, what? And all of a sudden, he's like, well, it like clicked in that moment and had a complete panic attack.
Oh, no.
Right. All of a sudden, he's coming to grips with reality.
Sure.
And he's facing his mortality for some reason.
This is the 8-year-old?
This is the 4-year-old.
Oh, the 4-year-old?
The 4-year-old.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was talking to my wife. I'm like, should we be doing it? Like, is that a little heavy? And I got to the point where I'm like, no, because this is the reality. And the sooner you learn that, again, the sooner you can comprehend it,
yeah,
the sooner you can get to the place of understanding and coping and in working through those feelings and pushing through the other side. Should I have done that?
I think
Are they
absolutely,
too young?
No, absolutely not. Now, I don't have children, but I do appreciate that my parents were brutally honest with us to an extent like you are with them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't scare tactics. It's just like, no, your heart can't come out of your chest.
Right.
Because.
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't believe in that. I mean, of course, you present it in a way, but no, why? You're not doing them any favors. And then down the road, you're not doing yourself any favors when you got to go, yeah, see, and re-explain it.
800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. I remember, I don't remember what comedian it was, but they had a joke like their dog died.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it was a moment that I had to explain to them what death was. And he's like, and then, you know, grandma's old. And then you know what happened to the dog? Now grandma. Like,
right.
That's how you, it was, you know, that's how you have to
position this stuff. Yeah, I mean, you could say, you know, Goldfishy Elmo is swimming in the big ocean in heaven.
Sure.
Well,
yes.
And it's an easier thing.
Oops. A lot of people, you know, no matter what age you are, still don't know how to handle death. So the earlier you can, you know, explain it to a kid, it should be the better.
Right. And Fishy Elmo passing, well, that's sad. They can deal with that a little bit.
I mean, it's not that sad. It's a fish.
Moment of silence for Fishy Elmo.
When you're 8 and 4, it's probably pretty sad.
Yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
Most kids, if you don't have a pet around or something like that, your first experience with death is
grandma, grandpa,
right. Or a loved one dying.
And that's heavy.
That's traumatic.
Yeah.
So now if you could get it in your head, everything's sort of transitory.
Right, it happens.
It's still sad, but you've got like a foundation to build on.
Yeah. So what have we learned here? Everybody should have a pet for their kids.
Another rabbit hole that I shouldn't have gone down is Henry told me, asked me one time, what happens when the sun goes out? I'm like, well, you're not going to like this, but everything gets very cold. And
you
we
ready
all,
for this one, kid?
And we all die. He's like, what? Yeah.
So, I think this kid should be on here interviewing our guests. He has some great questions.
He does.
I'm thinking Child Protective Services heading to the Redwood House later on.
I know. I'm sure Dr. Steve, it'll be a topic one day.
Oh, what is he doing
Do
back here?
Back
oh, you want to speak with Chris?
Thursday, next week.
Exactly. Coming up on the other side, Jamie joins the show. Yay! We'll talk to her next on JR Morning. All right, one more treatment to go for our pal Jamie Edmonds, who joins us this morning. First of all, how are we feeling? I'm excited. I know you're excited, but I'm very excited for you. What's going on?
I'm very excited, Chris. Thanks for knowing exactly my schedule. I appreciate it. My third of this stronger drug has really wiped me out this week. I'm like sleeping a lot, but that's okay. It's manageable. And just knowing that there's only one more to go, I feel I can't stop smiling.
Well, I know we've been talking about this. It's like, it's hard to know what somebody's going through, right? You talk and you ask those questions and things like that. I didn't realize that there could be so many different variations on how people deal with these drugs, which I guess makes sense. I never really thought about it, but like, you know, some people could just be really tired. Some people could feel really nauseous. That the range is pretty wide, but it seems like for you, you maintain that you get tired initially, and then you kind of bounce back afterwards.
Yeah, that has been the trend for me on this adriamycin drug, and for others, you know, it's why there's no like set thing that you can say, okay, this is going to happen to you. And that's kind of what you're looking for when you're first diagnosed. Like, what's going to happen? They have to tell you all of the possibilities,
right?
Which is really scary. And then you just got to see how you react. But I'm still trying to like eat right, work out, walk when I can. And I think that's helping.
All right. Well, you don't have to gloat about it. I mean, it's, we all are very, no, it's very impressive what you're doing. It is. Do when they go through what the potential side effects are, do they ramble them off as fast as they do on TV? On the side effects, or are they a little more diligent?
I mean, it felt like a lot, that first appointment with all of the things. I was just looking at my doctor going, this sounds like HE double hockey sticks. Like, this sounds terrible. Like, oh my gosh. And it was very scary at that time.
Sure. Yeah. Meanwhile, the new episode of the podcast is out. It's coming out today, right?
It's coming out today. Yes, I'm sure Justin Valentine, who's been amazing for me working on these pods with me, I'm sure he's working on it right now. And you're on it, Chris.
Oh, is this ours today?
This is yours, yeah.
Oh, cool. Very good. So Lloyd and I joined you, and we just got... First of all, it was nice to, you know, share microphones again. And then just kind of talk about, you know, what's been going on and, you know, how we've been going through everything while you've been... getting better and getting treatment and just the worker, the coworker perspective of things, right?
Because exactly.
Your life gets put on hold for a minute while you focus on you and your family. But then like your support cast widens, which is cool.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I said, hey, do you guys want to come on the pod? I called it coworker connection for this podcast because, you know, we're still coworkers. I'm still popping on here or there. You guys are still like supporting me in many ways. And so I thought it would be a good idea. And I thought we had a nice little conversation. Really relax. There were laughs.
And I apparently rubbed off on you a little bit because I made an incredibly embarrassing admission towards the end of that podcast of things that I've been watching lately. And it's been all nerdy founding father stuff. And now you're on board.
Well, I was on Netflix looking for some entertainment, and I'm like, you know what? I do want to brush up on my American history, and I saw all of the presidents that you said you were watching.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of them that you can see. Yeah, I ended up watching the one that was called The American Experiment on Netflix, and I thought it was pretty good.
It's on my list. How is it?
It's good. It just talks about how different people's paths to this democracy, like how we got here. And it's really interesting. It starts with George Washington, of course, and but him as like a young man when he went to sort of into the wilderness. And it's just really cool.
We've been leading up to this weekend, obviously, we've been talking about the founding fathers. We omitted Hamilton because I think Hamilton's more in the mainstream now, thanks to the musical. But we've talked about everybody, and one of the interviews that he did this morning was about John Jay. And John Jay, people like don't even know who John Jay is. Brian was like, I had to Google who John Jay was. Like, I did not know. But he
I'm Googling. Hold on.
He reached out to this expert at Samford University on John Jay. And he's like, hey, I know it's a little early, Eastern Standard, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, I will get up in the middle of the night to talk about John Jay. Like, it's very cool how, like, these people that had this, you know, uncertain what the future would look like, but they had this calling to help in some way. And, yeah, I don't know. It's very fascinating to me.
I find it all really fascinating. And the American Experiment one starts with George Washington as a younger man. And it's the one of the people that, like, they sit down and interview is like, we may not have liked George Washington in his early days. And so that grips you. You're like, what?
Yeah.
And then they explain. So it's cool.
Yeah, no doubt. What else is going on?
Watch that World Cup game yesterday.
I know. Awesome, right?
That red card, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I didn't
of course, it's the best player we have.
I know.
And now he's out for the next one against Belgium. I'm worried.
Are you worried? I'm not worried.
Yeah.
I'm not worried. I don't even know how many glasses of Kool-Aid I've drank. I said it earlier. I might be blinded by the fact that, like, I'm so unbelievably excited about all the periphery. Like, all the fans, all the excitement, all the celebrating that's being done together. Like, to me, the whole experience, I'm like, I don't know, the U.S. is going to win the World Cup. It's going to be unbelievable. I'm, like, off the deep end now. It's, I don't know. I'm not too worried about Belgium. The next game could be the problem.
Well, I'm only worried because our best player, Balogun, is out.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. But other than that, I have enjoyed watching, obviously, but just, like, the celebrations and the camaraderie and people coming together and singing whatever song from West Virginia. I'm blanking. You know, that one.
Yeah.
That
what's it called again? Country Road. Country Road.
I love watching all of that. I think that's fun.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I just felt like the electricity was coming into my living room from that stadium. Like, it was just it was buzzing, which was very cool. Let me play this. You saw those people climb to the top of the Empire State Building?
Yes.
Okay. Here was the air traffic control dispatch call of this. We haven't played it yet this morning. Here it is.
Yeah, what's all the hoopla going on over there?
Two geniuses climbed to the top of the Empire State Building, the top of the spire.
Oh, that's awesome. It's not some worker changing a light, is it?
Nah, it's a male, female, dressed in black. They had some flag they were waving when they were up at the top. And he just proposed to her.
Like, is that not the most New York dispatch call you've ever heard?
Yes. What's all the hoopla about?
What's all the hoopla about? Jamie, have a great weekend. Can't wait for
your last treatment.
We'll talk again very soon. That's going to
do it for
us. Happy
birthday, America.
Happy birthday, America. Kevin Deeds is next.